to It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us through thought-provoking conversations. For the topic hour, I go out and about and talk to people on the street about a wide variety of different subjects that affect everybody, both locally and globally. And for this, the Arts Hour, I interview local, national and international guests from all areas of the arts. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways that we engage with the world. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, do go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all my previous shows, guests and topics. And you can also connect with me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc. So again, that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm pleased to be interviewing Helene Cardona, poet, actress, literary translator, film producer, and Renaissance woman. A citizen of the United States, France, and Spain, Helene Cardona is fluent in English, French, Spanish, German, Greek, and Italian. Born in Paris of a Greek mother and Spanish father and raised all over Europe, she studied English philology and literature in Cambridge, England, Spanish at the International Universities of Santander and Beza, Spain, and German at the Goethe Institute in Bremen, Germany. She attended Hamilton College, New York, where she also taught French and Spanish, and the Sorbonne, Paris, where she wrote her master's thesis on Henry James. Helene is the recipient of numerous awards and honours, including a Hemingway grant and the USA Best Book Award. Her books include three bilingual collections of her own poetry, most recently Life in Suspension, and two translations of poetry by other authors. She has translated the works of many poets and writers. Her own poetry collections have been translated into 13 languages. In addition, Helene contributes to and co-edits an array of literary publications. A graduate of the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York, Helene trained with the renowned actress Ellen Burstyn, amongst other teachers. She has worked in theatre, performing at the Players Club, the Actors Studio, and with the Naked Angels and Ubu Repertory Theatre in New York. In film, she has had roles in the films Chocolat, Mumford, The 100-Foot Journey, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, World War Z, and Jurassic World. She is the computer voice in the TV series Heroes Reborn, and her many voice characters include Happy Feet 2 and Muppets Most Wanted. For Serendipity, she co-wrote with Peter Chelsom and Alan Silvestri the song Lucienne, which she also sang. Her eight producing credits include the award-winning documentary FAM, Women Healing the World. She is also trained in shamanic and dream work, past life regression, and astrology. Helene is one of the subjects of the newly published book, Ren Women, What Modern Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives. Welcome to the show, Helene.
Well, hello. So pleased to be with you tonight. Thank you, Ruth.
Well, thank you so much. And on this stormy night that it is as well, a stormy, rainy night, I feel very at home. I love the rain personally, so.
So do I.
All good for me. Oh, there we go. So, you know, we heard from the introduction there, Helene, that your life is embedded in art. I'm wondering if you can remember your earliest encounter with music, poetry, or art of any kind, when you realised first, perhaps, that art has a power beyond just entertainment.
Oh, it's experiential first, yes. I grew up, when I was a child, I was studying music. I was studying the piano at the Music Conservatory in Geneva, and then I continued in Paris at the Salle Pleyel with a master, Maître Sancan. And so music was always part of my world. So was art. We had art at home, so it's something that I grew up with. We had artist friends. It was normal.
Right, yes.
Yeah, and when I used to play the piano, I was transported always, outside of time. It was really like a meditation, and at the time I didn't have the words for it, but I knew that I would step out of time each time I practiced. And it was something that was very unique, it's hard to describe, but now of course I do have the words I can say, it's transcending, but it's something that really I loved doing.
Yes. And you mentioned somewhat that your parents had artistic friends. Your father, I believe, is an artist also. And so would you say you did grow up in a creative environment?
Well, I did on the one hand. On the other hand, I think during childhood, yes, for sure, because I would, go to the music conservatory and I would play the piano, and I would also dance, and I was able to, in a way, navigate all worlds, the artistic worlds, and I lived in nature. We lived in nature in a village at the foot of the mountains and outside of Geneva, and go to school, and I enjoyed it very much. We had wonderful teachers there in those villages, extraordinary. I mean, they just taught us so beautifully, and they loved, being teachers. But what happened at 14, the French system is one of selection through math, and so that aspect took over my life, because when you can do everything, you're encouraged to specialize through math. And even though I kept all the languages and Latin, and even though I kept playing the piano and dancing, math and physics took most of my time, basically. And it was a very profound shift, in my life. And there was a lot of expectations, I think, from my parents. They expected me to be a scientist of sorts, And so at 17, I went to medical school, and it was horrific. It was after 2 years, I dropped out. I had a breakdown. It wasn't for me at all, even though I loved, learning and all that. So that world, the artistic world, was good. I think was encouraged as long as it was on the side, as long as it could be managed that way. But after I dropped out of medical school, I studied literature, which I loved, but I also knew I wanted to pursue an artistic career, and that was out of the question, in my family. That's not something one did. So that was, a harsh reality to face. It's like, even though they had friends who were artists, painters, even though my father was a poet himself, he wanted the doctor in the house, basically.
So what do you think it meant to him in particular for you to be an artist? I mean, what was negative about it in his mind? Was it financial?
Yeah, it was a combination of things. It was basically not fulfilling my potential, my scientific potential, and having a good career. It was just giving up. I had the possibility. Not everybody can do math or science. He thought I was not honoring those gifts. And for me, it was the other way around. It was, okay, that's something that I happen to be able to do, but that I do not want to be my career. And I want to be able to do something I love. Mm. And that was never a consideration, you know.
Is that sort of relatively common idea, you know, that science and left brain activities somehow have more weight and gravitas,
yeah,
if you like,
superior,
than artistic pursuits? And also this idea, I mean, perhaps it's, well, I don't know, I was going to say because everybody can do something creative to some degree, but then everybody can do maths and science to some degree as well, can't they? So I'm not quite sure.
Well, yeah, I think it's very particular to France to have such a focus on the scientific, which is very good on the one hand, because you don't have as many climate change deniers as here, or people believing that dinosaurs coexisted with humans, you know. So it has, it's very good on the one hand, but I think it's more of a personal situation, my own, you know, the family I have, as opposed to, you know, there are many other artists who are supported by their families, you know, regardless of what country they live in, or, you know, who are encouraged to express themselves through writing or any form of artistic, you know, expression, and that's not what I had. So you know, I had to learn to assert myself, and to it's really a process of individuation I had to go through and say, well, this is who I am, and if that means I have to leave home, then I have to leave home, and that's what happened, basically.
Oh, dear.
Well, it's what it is, right? Yes, these were my cards, so, yeah.
Well, you obviously really felt very strongly about the artistic path to do that. You know, I mean, he obviously was perhaps intending, if he cut you off, that, you know, you would fall into line, I'm guessing.
Which I think a lot of people would.
Yes,
and I do.
Agree.
And I think he meant very well. So we do have a very good relationship now. But so that's my take on it. He just meant well, you know.
Yes.
He just thought I was just squandering, you know.
Right. I guess he clarified for you that you really, really did want to do it. At least.
Yeah, that became very clear.
Yes, yeah.
Well, I did give it a try. I mean, I did give, you know, I did give medical school a try. It's not like I didn't try. It just wasn't for me. And instead of empathizing with me, he was more like, well, at least do something else scientific, you know, and that's where I drew the line.
Yes.
I was like, no, that's you know, it's just, and I think that's really the true artists just can't help but being, you know, who they are. It's not like, I think if we could do something else, we would be doing it because we would have this financial security that we don't have, you know, by pursuing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Helen Cardona, poet, actress, literary translator, film producer, and Renaissance woman. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back with more conversation after these messages.
I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore. We are a one-stop shop for all your holiday needs, including books, gifts, children's books, toys, holiday cards, puzzles, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right gift for everyone on your list. If you want something special, we feature mini autograph books by best-selling authors at no extra charge. If you can't get downtown, our website has 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Bookshop Santa Cruz, celebrating the holidays for over 50 years.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. Just to remind you again, if you want more information about the show or if you want to hear previous shows, you can go to the website. It's a questionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all the previous shows, guests and topics. If you go to the homepage, there's a tab, guests, and if you click on that, then it'll take you to all photographs of all my previous guests. My guest this evening, Helen Cardona, will appear there from tomorrow. And if you wanted to tell people about her interview, you could click on it and you'd have photographs, information, and the audio to listen to. So again, that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. And Helen, you're featured as one of the Renaissance women in the new book, Ren Women, which I mentioned in the introduction. And one of the authors, Scott Griffith, states, "Not only do Renaissance souls have loads of interests, they are often capable of bringing a passionate level of intensity to several of them at once." And this certainly seems true of your life and work. So that gives us quite a bit to cover in this interview. But I'd like to start with your poetry. And as I mentioned, you've published three books of your own poetry, and your poetry's also appeared extensively in literary magazines and anthologies. So I wanted to ask you first, what drew you to poetry as an art form, to writing poetry?
You know, it's not even something that I thought about. It's just something that almost happened naturally. I mean, I just started writing poetry when I was 10, and I'm not sure why. It's a form I'm comfortable with, and I'd be curious to see if I could write fiction. So far, I've been too intimidated. So, yeah.
Right, yes. And I also was curious whether you remember your first encounter with a poem that you read. Is that too
well,
hard?
Well, we did. Well, I'm not sure exactly which the very first one would be. In school, in France, in primary school, we do, we are exposed to poetry. So definitely from school, like Robert Desnos and other poets. And at home, we had books as well.
Mm.
So, yeah.
For a lot of people nowadays, I think poetry seems somewhat inaccessible, maybe even irrelevant in these terribly practical, busy technological times. I think for some people, it almost seems like harking back to a bygone era. How do you think poetry affects us differently to prose?
Well, I think any any art form, I think art is primordial. And I actually think there are many, many poets. When you start talking to people, you realize that it's almost, you know, like acting, like everybody wants to be a poet or an actor. So I do think that it has, that there are more poets and there is more poetry than one, you know, thinks of at first glance. You know, the thing is, it's not very commercial in that sense that it's not, it's you're right. I mean, the bestsellers are usually not poetry. But art is so important. It reflects, you know, on who we are, and artists tell stories who we reflect and help us understand who we are, and it helps us connect with one another and broadens our horizons. And also, I think art can be a catalyst for social change, you know.
Yes.
But art in general and poetry in particular brings us to the edge of the incomprehensible, I think. It's like it offers a new vision of the universe. It's a way to express the ineffable. And so I think that's why a lot of us are drawn to it, because it speaks to everyone, really.
Yes.
I think it's just being exposed to it, you know.
Yes.
I think in the U.S., less people have access to that, because education is not free for everyone. And I think when you start changing that, when you start having education available to everyone for free...
You mean university education?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
But even, you know, in general, to have better high schools as well, you know, to help people be better educated in general, so things don't take on, like, you know, poetry doesn't become something that one thinks of as inaccessible, you know.
Yes,
It used to be spoken, you know, it used to be, like, you know, we are storytellers, and it used to be... passed on like that from generation to generation. So in a way, you know, with rap and with other, you know, spoken word, you know, artists, that's poetry as well.
Yes. I mean, there's a unfortunate trend in the core curriculum in America, moving towards more sort of practical uses of English and less creative texts and more sort of analysing non-fiction and writing about that. And I think that's very short-sighted, really. I mean, obviously one has to be able to understand, you know, non-fiction and, you know, and be able to write a good letter, etc. But I think that,
right,
you know, like you said, being confronted and being able to understand the ineffable is also hugely important and brings us into places and senses of knowing that we wouldn't have otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it has a therapeutic value. You know, it's transcendental, and it opens one up to all kinds of things, you know, other cultures, you know, experiences. So, yes.
Yeah, I know. I have a quote from you. You said, "The more we educate ourselves about other cultures, the more we understand one another. We then don't look at the other or the one who is different or the foreigner in fear."
Right.
Yeah, I think.
And this is so true.
Yes, it is.
Especially now.
Yes, it's even more important to remember that.
So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your latest bilingual poetry book is called Life in Suspension and has been described by the Oscar-nominated writer-director Lawrence Kasdan as surprising, upsetting, and ultimately uplifting. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired you to write this collection?
Well, a lot of the poems actually were came to me following my mother's death, which was a very traumatic event in my life.
Mm.
She died 20 years ago, very suddenly.
Mm.
So it was a shock to my system, and even more so because she was the only one who supported me. Mm. Obviously, I mentioned earlier my father didn't for a long time, and it was very hard to even stay in touch with her. But we did, and that emotional support that she gave me, unconditional, was the only thing I had. So, you know, I moved to to a different country, continent, to start over, and she was my anchor, basically. Mm. So it was a very difficult time, and writing was very healing, basically. Writing poetry was a very healing experience for me. So many of the poems are dedicated to her, and a few years after she died, I met my partner, John Fitzgerald, and he's everything to me, and so supportive, and so that support came back into my life. Mm. So there are poems dedicated to him as well, and there are poems that come from the dream world, as well. So, but the title poem is "Life in Suspension," which it's the first 16 years of my life, basically, in a nutshell, through, I think it's 3 pages or so. Mm. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a narrative poem in terms of the different countries that I lived in, and the experiences that shaped me.
Mm. Yes. Like your other poetry books, every poem in Life in Suspension is presented in English and French. And before I talk to you about that, I'd like to feature one of the poems called "A House Like a Ship." And I thought I could read it in English, and then if you're willing, you could read it in French, because that's how it appears in the book for listeners. All the poems have French on one side and English on the other, which I have fun with reading the French part, but it would obviously be much better with you reading it. So if I read it in English, and then if you would read it in French, that would be lovely.
Great, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So this is "A House Like a Ship" by Helene Cardona. I live in a house like a ship, at times on land, at times on ocean. I will myself into existence, surrender, invite grace in. I heed the call of the siren. On the phantom ship, I don't know if I'm wave or cloud, undine or seagull. Lashed by winds, I cling tight to the mast. Few return from the journey. I now wear the memory of nothingness, a piece of white sail, wrapped like second skin.
Beautiful, thank you. Une maison navire. Je vis dans une maison navire, tantôt sur terre, tantôt sur mer. J'existe à coup de volonté, m'abandonne et invite la grâce du ciel. J'obéis à l'appel de la sirène. Sur le bateau fantôme, je ne sais si je suis vague ou nuage, ondine ou goéland. Fouettée par les vents, je m'agrippe bien au mât. Rares sont ceux qui reviennent du voyage. Désormais, j'ai pour habit la mémoire du néant, une pièce de voile blanche en guise de seconde peau.
Well, thank you for that. And I have my own kind of experiences and ideas of why you've got the French and the English there. But I wanted to ask you, is it an artistic choice to present the poems in two languages, or a practical one?
It's really both. The suggestion came to me from my first publisher when I brought her the manuscript. She thought it would be a good idea to also present a French version of it. And so I translated the English poems into French, which is my first language. Really, English is my fifth, but it's become the dominant language. And by so doing, I made so many discoveries and came to revise the English as well. And so it improved the original text, you know, and I think it's just something unique because of my situation, really, you know. Oh, yes. I live in between, you know, several cultures and languages, and it's all part of who I am.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, I did study French, but I am not, you know, fluent in French. So for me, reading it, I'm not really taking in the meaning of the French words, but there's something, it enables you to experience the energy, I think, of the poem, if you like, in a different way. I mean, I've sort of read the English version, and then if I read it in French, I'm just experiencing a different sort of way of understanding the world, because there's a whole different language and culture that, you know, I know nothing of in a way, and yet I'm entering into it through this language. But also there's just a sense and a feel of the poem in a for me, a non-word form, because I don't know what the words mean when I'm saying it in French. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, the sounds and the rhythm.
Yes.
And even if you know the language, the poem has a slightly different personality in a different language, you know?
Mm.
Even the same poem, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest this week, Helen Cardona, who is a polyglot. She speaks six languages. French is one of them, which you might have just heard if you just tuned in. She's a poet, actress, translator, a Renaissance woman. So I'm really enjoying talking to her. We're going to go to a break now, but we'll be back after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest this week, Helen Cardona. As I was saying before the break, poet, actress, literary translator, film producer, and Renaissance woman. And I just wanted to let you know, if you would like more information about Helen and her books and what she's up to, you can go to her website, helencardona.com, and that's HelenCardona.com, HelenCardona.com. And also, if you're interested, I mentioned a book that Helen is included in, a book about Renaissance, modern Renaissance women, and that is renwomen.com, RenWomen.com. And before the break, we were reading some poems from Helen's new book of her own poetry, and we're just going to read a couple more of those. The next one I'd like to read in, I'm going to read it in English, and then Helen's going to read it in French, because if you have just joined us, the book, all the poems are presented in both in French and English. So we're kind of giving you that perspective over the airwaves here. So this is Woodwork by Helen Cardona. If I could gather all the sadness of the world, all the sadness inside me, into a gourd, I'd shake it once in a while and let it sing, let it remind me of who I used to be, bless it for what it taught me, and stare at it lovingly for not seeping out of its container.
Travail d'orfèvre. Si je pouvais rassembler toute la tristesse du monde, toute la tristesse enfouie en mon sein, à l'intérieur d'une gourde, je la secourais de temps en temps pour qu'elle chante et me rappelle qui j'étais. Je la bénirais pour ce qu'elle m'a appris et la regarderais avec amour pour qu'elle ne s'échappe pas de son récipient.
Lovely, and I really like this poem. It's this idea of all the sadness of the world and all the sadness within us, all in a gourd. It's a very interesting idea. And then finally, if you'd like to read, I think you were saying you'd like to read Twisting the Moon, and you're going to read that in English for us.
All right. And this poem has an epigraph by Hafiz. Now is the time to know that all you do is sacred. Hmm. Twisting the Moon. We shared the coast of Maine in June. Hundreds of whales, lobster sandwiches, buttermilk pancakes, and a room in Bar Harbor with antique tub. They're now a cloister of shadows loved, goldsmith of the music of time. She left when circumstances met. I dream of offering her strawberries on sacred moons, healed by the beauty of memories, ready to start over. As if knowing nothing.
I find, personally, I like poetry best when it's read out loud. Then I sort of feel the poem comes alive. Is that just me, or do you think poetry has more power when it's spoken?
Yeah, it's meant to be spoken, yes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely find that. And I think even if, you know, you're just reading it to yourself, I feel like I don't get the real feel of a poem until I read it out loud.
Yes.
I'm wondering if part of the allure of poetry is finding words for the many non-verbal experiences we have. You know, I mean, we are giving words to them, but we're trying to, in a way, represent emotions and senses that, you know, are nonverbal in a lot of ways. Do you
precisely
find that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what poetry does. It's exactly it. Just like music and just like painting, it's a way to. But this is, you know, it's really uncanny, because it's a way to put into actual words what cannot be said. So when you find a way around it, it's extremely satisfying.
Yes. As a Renaissance woman, another string to your bow is acting. And in some ways, this seems the opposite of writing poetry, which is so introspective. I wondered what attracted you to acting.
Well, there again, it's really hard to tell. I'm not sure I know where it comes from. It's just who I am, right? Mm. And so it needs to be expressed. And what I have to do is honor that. I think if I want to stay alive, so it's something that's very deep within me and that wants to express. That part of me that needs to be expressed and even though it appears as if they're not similar, they really come from the same place. You know, it's just different ways of expressing yourself and what's deeply seated within you. And so the writing, you have more control over it because you just need yourself, you know,
yes.
And that's it. The other is a collaborative effort, endeavor, and so you need to be working with a group of people in order to make it happen.
Yes, yeah. You've also done a considerable amount of work as a translator, and your latest book is Beyond Elsewhere. What attracts you to translation?
Well, you know, it's also very strange because in a way I grew up with it. We at home spoke different languages, so French of course, because I was born in France and we lived in France and Switzerland mostly, but my father is from Spain, my mom's from Greece, so all these, you know, we spoke all these three languages at home. Then, you know, when you live in Switzerland, German is part of the equation somehow. So translating was a natural, you know, process in terms of going back and forth between languages without really being consciously aware of it. When I started studying literature, translation became part of it because I specialized in English and American literature. So I had to study translation as well, or I chose to, let's put it that way, study translation as well. and then things came to me. I wasn't necessarily thinking of translating or publishing translations, but I met Dorianne Locke at a reading that she gave here in Los Angeles, and then she gave me her book, What We Carry, and she said, would you like to translate it? And I said, yes, of course. And it took a very long time. I did a first draft, and then finally I met this publisher at Edition des Signes through Patrice at Edition des Signes, through one of his authors, Gabriel Arnoux-Laujac, whom I translated into English. And then he was interested in publishing the translation I had previously done by Dorianne Locke, you know, some 10 years ago. So Gabriel, really, I met on Facebook through mutual friends and discovered his work there and just loved it so much. And it was almost an invitation that couldn't be refused to translate his work. A little gem. It's a long narrative poem, and so it's a prose poem, I was very in tune, you know. It came naturally.
Yes.
But it was also challenging because his writing is concise and there are some puns which are always difficult to translate. John Fitzgerald, with whom I live, who's an extraordinary poet, and he's had four poetry books published, and his range is extraordinary, so much, you know, wider than mine. He also writes fiction and nonfiction, and I've also translated some of his poetry, but I haven't done a whole book in terms of, you know, translating him into French.
Yes.
So those things were just because they came to me that way. Dorianne asked me, and then Gabriel through Facebook approached me, and
A kind of labor of love, I would think it probably is.
Labor of love.
Yeah. I'm very interested in the psychologist Alice Miller, and she writes at length about how art can help people process difficult events, whether these are events they've experienced themselves or events they've witnessed. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on whether you feel art can have a healing effect on those making art and those experiencing it.
Both. Absolutely. I do think there is a healing aspect to art. I think it's incredibly therapeutic. I mean, that's why I think we do, you know, love art so much as well, is it heals us. So we do heal ourselves first, I think, by expressing it, you know, as artists. I think it's the wounded healer in us, you know, the shaman. And so we do, that's why it's necessary. That's why you can't not do it. It's a calling that I think it's lethal if you turn your back on it. And so we go to the movies, we experience that, you know, the stories that are told, they have a profound impact on us. I mean, some are simply for the, you know, purpose of entertainment, but that too is also healing, I think. You know, pleasure and fun and entertaining is just as important, I think. We need to honor that too.
How do you feel it has this healing effect? Is it through empathy, do you think, or through vicariously experiencing things, or having things brought into awareness that perhaps we couldn't put our finger on before, or combination of all that?
I think it's because we recognize ourselves in the stories that are told, is really what I think happens. We connect deeply and we recognize ourselves, and so that's the transformative process. It's also highly symbolic. All the stories use symbols, you know, and they're myths in a way, you know, that are told and retold, and this is how we learn, really, you know, in life and move forward. So that's why they're so important. We need to remember and understand where we come from, who we are, and we can tap into different worlds and into the past as well as into the present and the future through art.
Absolutely. I mean, I see art obviously as a means of communication. We've just got a couple of minutes left, but I'm just wondering, is there a theme through all your artistic endeavors, or is each different, would you say, in what you're trying to communicate?
Well, I think for me, everybody, you know, that has a different way. You know, there's a different slant to everybody's art, but mine is about consciousness.
A deeper understanding of consciousness, or
yes, a deep need to understand, you know, who am I, why am I here, what is my purpose, how can I fulfill it, fulfill myself, you know, my evolution, that of humanity and of the world. I mean, these are the questions that, you know, haunt me.
Right, sort of the meaning of life, I suppose, if we put it in a trope.
Yeah.
Well, you have a fascinating array of skills and work, and just want to point readers again to this new book, Wren Women, which you can get on Amazon, in which Helene is one of the featured artists. It's about Renaissance women and what they can bring to all our lives, and that's a fabulous book. And then also, again, Helene has two new publications. One is her own poetry, Life in Suspension, and then her translation, which, remind me of the name of that, Helene.
Beyond Elsewhere.
Beyond Elsewhere, that's right, yes. Yeah. So you can find information about both of those at helenecardona.com. And can you also purchase those there, Helene, or should they go to Amazon? Or?
Oh, the links are there.
Yes, okay, great.
Directly to the publisher or to Amazon.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking to me and also reading your poems so beautifully, especially, well, I say especially in French and in English. Very impressive.
Thank you so much, Ruth. Yes. Such a treat. Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you again. So that was the lovely and talented Hélène Cardona. And if you have enjoyed this podcast, as I mentioned earlier, do tell your friends about it. Tell them to go to itsaquestionofbalance.com and they'll be able to listen to the interview there. And also, in the past, I've really had some fabulous guests, just wonderful artists ranging from Oscar-winning directors, actors, Pulitzer Prize-winning authors, multi-platinum musicians, and a whole array of artists whose work is just wonderful. And also, of course, our really interesting topic discussions with people on the street. So that's itsaquestionofbalance.com. Thank you for listening. I look forward to seeing you next time.